We made this. Welcome to the X-Cast, so truth is in here. This is our special Fight the Future Minute podcast. I am your host, Marlene Stemme. You're listening to our coverage of Minute 99 of the X-Files Fight the Future. This minute begins at 98 minutes with Mulder asking Scully if she can breathe and ends at 98 minutes and 59 seconds with Mulder carrying Scully through the cryopod corridor. To discuss this minute, I'm joined by X-Cast patron Cortland Waters Bartley. Welcome back to Fight the Future Minute, Cortland.
Hey, Marlene. Good to be here again.
Yes. Well, shall we carry on with where we were in the last minute?
We shall.
Okay. So Mulder has just pulled the alien tube from Scully's throat after much ado and the ship kind of reacting to the vaccine / antidote. And Scully is free from the tube. And at that point, Mulder asks Scully, says, breathe, Scully, can you breathe? And she gags and spits and then starts to breathe. While all this is going on, and it's pretty dramatic in terms of just like a gut reaction to somebody. And Mulder is just very kind and patient. And her breath is visible. Her skin looks really cold. I don't know if you thought anything about that, but just the way they made her skin look like it was frigid.
I mean, I sort of imagined that she actually was very cold. Just as far as conditions on set go, it looks to me genuinely like she's very cold. I mean, she's a very good actress, so that take that for what you will, but I think probably it was actually very cold. And I think as we established in the previous, she's still at this point standing in like half a tank of cold liquid, cold alien water. Liquid water, whatever it is. Yeah. So I'm guessing Scully is very, very cold. Yeah.
In a moment, she's going to say as much, but right now we have.
She's going to tell us.
Yes. While this drama is unfolding, though, the base station is making all these ominous echoing noises. So you can kind of hear that in the background of Mulder and Scully. You can't hear much else because it's pretty focused on them rather than the goings-on in the rest of the base station. But you can hear these creaking noises, I would say.
That actually, that's my favorite part about this is how close in we are on their sort of like faces or like that space right between them, you know? I think that's really narrows our focus too because we know that the ship is, things are happening around them. We know that the syndicate are out there with their weapons. We know things are happening and it doesn't matter because we can't see any of that. We're just focused on them.
Right.
I like that.
The shots are close up of them. And then when they go to the other shots, some of them, so you can see some of the details a little closer, but it's not really a perspective close shot where you're supposed to be immersed in the scene with that, you know? And I think it's the rest of this, you know, the story that's going on in the base station from a narrative standpoint, it's interesting in terms of how the X-Files is going to continue as like a story, but like what we, you know, really are concerned with at this point is Mulder and Scully. So that's all very well done. So yes, she's shaking with cold and then Mulder leans in and he puts his hand on her shoulder. And at that point, Scully says, cold, I'm cold. And confirmed our obvious suspicions that she's indeed cold.
It is very cold there.
Yes. And she's trembling and she's very vulnerable, which I thought was, I mean, it's obvious that she would be. I just thought that was very well done because we've sort of seen Scully stronger earlier in the movie, you know, and in this situation, anyone would be vulnerable. But because it's Scully, it packs more of an emotional punch to me.
Well, and I think too, and I feel like people say this about Scully all the time, like she is a small person, but I don't think that her character is really ever small. And so when I think in moments when she like really actually is very small, it's more striking because it's just not how we typically see her at all.
Yeah, that's a great point because it's sort of like that personality and that like sense of presence that she normally has isn't there. And so it's just like the physicality of it. And then just that moment is very intimate and sort of it's a heightened perilous intensity moment, but it's just between them. And I like that aspect of it. And then Mulder quickly touches her face and says, I'm going to get you out of there, and breaks away the remaining glass. I like that he took that moment to be very gentle and present rather than just going on with the action. And he, you know, moves along with it as he needs to. But he tends to take his time, I think, looking around sometimes in awe. And there's several moments when I feel like later when I feel like greater urgency would be warranted. Like, okay, there's not the time for this. But at that moment, like him just stopping to be present with her, I thought was important.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, I mean, it makes me think about various times when we, like Mulder is constantly, because he's Mulder, chasing after things or trying to find things or rescue people or, you know, various sort of variations of rescuing Scully or finding Scully or whoever the person, and not necessarily Scully, but, and I think that he's usually really good in those moments at like making it a human thing and not just, you know, and I think that's not just like a rescue or like heroic thing. It's a human thing for him. And so I think that's, it's just a good example of it in this moment, and more powerful in, at least in my mind, because it's Scully. This is a very meaningful thing for him to go and find her and for her to be like breathing and alive.
Right.
So.
Right. And I think that's heightened too, when you see him looking at the other cryopods of the people in various stages of the alien development. And that he was able to find like her, that one person.
Yes. I think about all those other people all the time because he doesn't even stop. I mean, he looks at their faces, but only to ascertain that they are not Scully and then moves on. I always think that it's very much a Mulder thing to do. Like he's there to find Scully and he's going to find Scully. And that's, you know, he's like focused on that, but also not a particularly Mulder thing to do in that he doesn't even try to rescue any of the other people. That's a little crazy to think about all those other people.
It is. And I think that that's true, that Mulder, were it not about Scully, that he would be concerned about all of the people there. He'd want to go back in, or he would want to, you know, like get all of them out, whatever it is that he's doing to be the hero. And I don't mean a hero, like necessarily in an ego way, but just in terms of like trying to help.
Yeah. That he's able to put that aside. He would be breaking all that glass, but he's very focused on just Scully.
One thing.
At this point.
So we go from the scene and also the sound of Mulder smashing the oxygen tank once again into the cryopod to remove the rest of the glass.
At her knees. Get Scully out of there.
Yes. Perhaps a more appropriate location.
I guess. Overall. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just as risky in some ways.
That's true. That's true. I mean, she's not going to be able to walk that well anyway, though.
No. But
he has to do what he can, I guess. And so from this, though, we segue to the base station evacuation alarm and then the cigarette smoking man saying, abandon your post and evacuate. And this is just total chaos. And I noticed the last time I watched this that someone is being electrocuted by a malfunctioning system in the background.
What?
And they're all just running out, like sparks flying. Yeah, it's just every...
I didn't even notice that. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to go back and look.
I'm usually worried about Mulder and Scully, and so I like kind of take that in just to get a sense of what's going on. But all the people are running around, and there's a man up on a ladder doing something, and he's being electrocuted because he's shaking and sparks are flying and so forth. And there's just all this noise and confusion. And basically, people are leaving each other for dead, I guess, in these scenes. If they're letting this man be electrocuted, then they're all like, well, let's just get out of here, you know. And so that's kind of a contrast with the quiet scene of Mulder rescuing Scully, but it's also just... sort of the, I guess, the ethos of the cigarette smoking man to survive.
Well, and I don't, it seems like the whole situation here in the station is a little bit confusing to me because it seems like they knew what they were doing there. You know, they're there with elaborate monitoring systems, but apparently they're not prepared for this, or at least they're only prepared in a limited way for this moment, where the aliens could wake up or something could go wrong. I don't know. So maybe this has been going on for a long time and they've never had a situation like this before. You know, that would be my assumption, but it does seem like panic. Like, you know.
Right. I think it's a good point though, because you'd think that they would have some sort of like backup system or defense mechanism if something did happen, or where it would stop. Like if the vaccine was spreading among the various cryopods, there would be something to keep it from getting into the larger system, or some like valve they would shut off. I don't know. Well,
yeah. And I mean, I
Like,
suppose
why
the
are they all
vaccine,
so connected?
right. I suppose the vaccine was never meant to be anywhere near the ship anyway. And so they just have, they, the syndicate, have control of the vaccine and I guess control of the ship. And so they, never the two will meet in their minds, but they do seem a little unprepared for the abandon your post and evacuate moment.
Right. And then somebody asked the cigarette smoking man, what's happened? And he says, it's all gone
I've
to
gone to
hell.
hell.
That's
Yes,
it. No
I wrote
explanation.
that down.
I've noticed that he
All gone
likes
to
to
hell.
reference hell.
He does.
So he gets to say it one more time. It's all gone to hell. And then the other person asks him, and what about Mulder? And the cigarette smoking man says, he'll never make it. Now, for those watching Fight the Future as their first exposure to the X-Files, that is dramatic, and I could see how that would, really be worrisome. But I don't mean to make this too comedic, but I feel like the cigarette smoking man should have remembered his previous experience with Mulder and Scully. So, like, he knows how the program works. He's been in the X-Files before, so the whole he'll never make it part, I don't know, maybe it does speak to desperation on Mulder's part and that it's just as the most daunting task of his life, but I just don't think the cigarette smoking man should have underestimated him.
No, actually, I completely agree with you. I in my notes, I wrote down CSM thinks that Mulder is dead, and then in parentheses I put, yeah, right. Because no, of course he's not dead. Of course he's not. I mean, the cigarette smoking man also not dead. So
Correct.
I'm, of course not. Of course he's not. I mean, it is dramatic, I suppose, for the movie, for the climax of the
Yes,
movie, sure.
it is. It's
But
like, but we all saw Anasazi. We know about that boxcar and that he got right out of there
we know no one's dying here.
eventually. Yeah. So Mulder unlatches the cryopod and pulls a semi-conscious Scully from it. I guess she's aware, but she's kind of inert, and he lays her on his coat. And she zips and bundles around her.
So cute.
It is. Now, in his commentary, Rob Bowman mentions that Taia Leone suggested the moment when we see Mulder take Scully out of the cryopod, because Taia Leone apparently had watched them film the scenes that are upcoming of Mulder carrying Scully and said that it would be nice if they had a moment when he's actually taking her out. And I like that they included that.
Yeah, well, I think it's another reminder of how vulnerable, I suppose, Scully is at this point. She's got nothing. She's stuck in this pod thing that is broken and naked and obviously unwell. Whatever the vaccine has cured her of, she's still obviously not herself. So I think that that is another reminder of the sort of full ramifications of the situation.
I agree. And so as the base station is creaking and groaning and liquids dripping, all kinds of great sound effects, and then Mulder's carrying Scully through the corridor past other cryopods and then some kind of like almost geyser-looking vents that are emitting smoke and steam. And I really like that visual of them, or of him carrying her, them going through as the sort of steam is shooting up in various sides. I thought that looked really good.
The whole set is, and we haven't really talked about it that much because we've been focused on pretty specific things, but I think that whole set is a great atmosphere for where we are meant to be. Like at this point, we're in an alien spaceship buried under the ice. And I think it's really dark, but we can still see enough that we know, kind of what's around. I think it's pretty great location.
I think it's interesting too, the things that I've read about the detail that some of the special effects people put into creating the people that are inside the other cryopods that we don't really see for that long. But just giving them like human detail or the detail of somebody that's like a little bit further along that path of development and so forth, and what that would look like to somebody, almost to somebody that really was there rather than just watching that as a movie. You know, there's a lot of that, and then a lot of just how the lighting effects worked and so forth that really kind of like illuminated that. I still can't figure out exactly what the structure is. It doesn't quite make sense to me, but I guess that's the mystery of it.
I mean, I think there's that one moment, I mean, several minutes before this one, where Mulder is, he's just gotten into the ship and we kind of see this huge, like, panorama of inside. And there's so much, I mean, it's huge in that, the interior of that ship is enormous. And we only see this one, basically, this one hallway where Scully is. This is meant to introduce scale, to us, like, and scale to the conspiracy, but obviously they're not, this is the X-Files, they're not going to tell us what everything is.
Show how all the
you know,
pieces
yeah,
go together.
We don't
yeah.
get to see all of that. We just get to know that it's there.
It's
kind of. So I think it's amazing the detail yeah. they put into things.
And it does make Scully seem like one tiny needle in the vast conspiracy haystack.
Yeah.
So it's like as rough as all of the effort to find her has been, like even just being able to locate her you
yeah.
know, is sort of miraculous.
Yeah, he's yeah. lucky he fell down that giant chute or ladder or whatever right. he falls down.
That's a whole other issue that needs like more minutes. It's like the role of like luck and serendipity.
Ugh, yes, Mulder.
And possibly he's only just, I mean, we could just even cover just when Mulder falls through something like luck and serendipity.
It does happen to him like at least sometimes. Maybe yeah. we could even say regularly, maybe.
Yeah. So. We've pretty much gone through that activity. But as the minute ends, Mulder is carrying Scully along the corridor. I wanted to talk a moment and get your opinion on the part about Scully wearing Mulder's socks. Because I have to say, it's one of my favorite parts of the movie because it's a small character parts, let us say. It's just a small, thoughtful detail. And in the making of book, there's a photo of Gillian Anderson and Dave Duchovny like, on the set between takes. They look kind of like, I mean, they just look like they're in between takes. They're kind of cold. They're dressed like they are in the rescue sequence, but she's sort of like leaning back on something, but you could see her socks. That's what first cued me into that is that it's like a little thoughtful thing. Cause you think like a coat is necessary and pants and so forth, but it's just the fact that he put his socks on her has always struck me as like another tiny detail in the midst of like all the crazy things going on. And I'm not a shipper, but I would say that this is like the most romantic thing in sort of a classic or platonic sense, like the most romantic thing from him to her in the X-Files is the socks.
I honestly, and I, Marlene, I know that you're not a shipper, but this is like the most shipperiest thing I feel like I've ever heard you talk about.
It possibly is.
And I'm not saying that because I, you know, your opinion is perfectly valid, but I do, I am a, you know, I am a shipper. And so I, of course, have thought many times about how he, I mean, not just the fact that he dresses her, but like he literally, he has to like take off his own coat and presumably take off his shoes and remove his socks to
yes.
put them on her. And like right. that, he took some time in what was a sort of like imminently dire situation to worry about her feet being cold. And I mean, mm-hmm. again, I do want to point out that her shoes were not that far away, but okay, fine. He's going to just put her socks on. That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
I do wonder what his thought was, but and I doubt he had a plan for what he would do once they were out, you know, on the ice.
Right.
But okay. I do think that it is a level of care that is significant and adorable.
I do too. I think there's something about it that's like almost beyond gender as well. And I remember... Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know like, oh, you know, he has to dress her, but I don't think, I mean, I think pretty obviously in this moment, this is like a traumatic, horrible, this is not like a romance-y kind of moment, you know,
no.
this is like a life-saving kind of moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think definitely beyond gender is a good way to put it.
Yeah. And I remember I had a friend that, it was a non-X-File friend, but she saw the movie around the time that it came out and her critique was that it was almost like too much of a damsel in distress plotline, like Scully being taken and Mulder rescuing her. And it was sort of a trope and stereotype. And I can see that. I think there are parts of the movie that are, you know, enough of like that sort of Hollywood formula, but there's something about this part to me that's, and it could be just the dire circumstance and like Mulder's absolute will to rescue her. That's kind of transcend that. So.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally recognize that critique. For a long time, Scully is not a part of this movie because she is stung by a bee and unconscious, right? Like,
right.
She's sort of absent for a while. And so, I mean, I can totally see that critique. I never, as a viewer, never particularly watched it that way because I was watching as a fan, like as an X-File fan, who I know who Dana Scully is. And if in this moment she's stung by a bee and abducted by aliens, like, that does not make her a damsel in distress.
Right.
Like, you know, for me.
I think that there's more to it, like when they get to the rescue part. Even though she's still, like we talked about, is like the very weak, vulnerable one. I don't think it takes that same tack anymore because of like who they are as characters.
Yeah. No, I would agree, I think.
Do you have anything else about this minute that you wanted to add?
I do not have anything else. I think we're good.
Okay. So that's all for this Fight the Future minute. We'll be back next time for minute 100. And in the meantime, where can our listeners find you on social media, Cortland?
They can find me on Instagram and Twitter. If you just search for my name, Cortlan, I'm sure that you'll find me.
Okay. And I am on Twitter at MarleneMHS and on Facebook in the XCast Basement Group. So thank you all for listening. And until next time, trust no one.
Elsewhere on We Made This. Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
We've already got three versions, I think, haven't we? Yeah. So
we've got Ace as well.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking just up to this episode. So we've got the Living Rimmer, a Hologram Rimmer, and a Backup Hologram Rimmer. So we've already got three Rimmers in the space of six episodes.
That's more Rimmers than many people would want.
Yeah, but it's certainly worth diving into because as you get into, as you say, Ace Rimmer, there's a couple of versions of Ace Rimmer. There's
the Evil Future Rimmer.
Without a Mouse.
I don't know if I've ever heard Gaelic spoken before, but I don't think this man was speaking Gaelic.
I don't speak Gaelic, so I'm afraid I cannot speak to that. But given how absolutely obsessive Stevenson seems to have been in most other regards, I think he might have been speaking some form of gibberish.
Yeah, we've seen in this show, especially in one of our Dinosaurs Is Missing, some very horrific,
yes.
and Herbie as well, actually, in The Love Bug, lots of dialogue that is clearly made up language, supposed to be Chinese. So my bum was clenching a bit when I heard this supposed Gaelic, because I'm pretty sure it's not.
Free with this month's issue.
I decided to have a look to see if I could find that interview online anywhere, and I couldn't, but in my searching, the photo from that interview was collected on a website called thestrokesareilluminati.blogspot.com.
The Strokes are a bunch of overrated hacks then?
No, they're actually Illuminati, apparently, according to this website.
I mean, that explains a lot. Right.
They are the secret rulers of the world.
Yeah. I mean, you know, current climate, that seems to be the work of the Strokes.
Yeah. Maybe that's all what was hidden in the album.
It's almost certainly.
New York City cops meant something else.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.